Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling. I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Mo.
Alright Mo, and we're going to talk some wrestling.
Absolutely Addy, we're going to get right to it. Biggest show of the week always is Raw, so we're going to talk Raw first. There was a lot of great moments coming out of Raw. Well, I wouldn't say a lot of great moments, because great moments means it was an exciting show.
What show did you watch?
It was a show, that was a show that did what it needed to do to build towards Mania, but unfortunately it sacrificed the live crowd to do it. But nevertheless, I mean, there was a lot of interesting moments. The Cena and Miz interaction was big, just very interesting. The Swagger being introduced in kind of the spot that we had talked about Sheamus having earlier.
Last week,
Austin obviously going to play into that, which is very interesting. See how that happens this week. Triple H's promo, we're not going to ignore that. That's a big thing. But the biggest thing of the week, obviously, Brie Bella, number one contender to the Divas title. Your thoughts?
Well, I was hoping Nikki was going to win.
Yeah.
But...
Actually, let's talk about The Rock. I think that was a better promo than his first promo content-wise, so I'd like to hear what you think.
Content-wise, it was. I'll get the negative out of the way, and it has nothing to do with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. It has more to do with the guys in the truck. When they were showing the live crowd, when they pulled back for the interview and were showing the live crowd when The Rock was going on about how he paved the way, and he was speaking from his heart, and he was getting very serious, and he wasn't doing his Rockisms and his catchphrases. He was doing not the entertaining promo, but the money promo, as it were, the promo that needed to be done to build the heat between him and Cena, really. The crowd, because he wasn't there, was, you know, understandably, you know, dead, and they showed that. They pulled back, and they were showing the Jumbotron with the people in Buffalo there sitting on their hands and kind of looking around and talking to each other.
I think the crowd looked to me like they were enjoying it. I think they were engaged. I just don't think they weren't interacting in the same way because he wasn't there live. But I mean, your problem is with the direction.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, is that's a negative to me. It has nothing to do with the content of the promo. It was the way that it was presented. I think it could have been done better. I think it could have been shot, you know, square up and not brought back to the crowd who's, you know, sitting there and not doing anything. Then I think that they could have had a better, just an overall better production of it.
Okay, yeah, you hit that point. Let's hear your point. What do you think about the actual promo itself, though?
Well, the promo itself, the content, I mean, it was great, and it was something that, you know, following the shows as closely as we do, and reading the behind the scenes, I think we sort of knew Rock's position already, and we knew Rock's thoughts about how, you know, hey, I left to go and do this.
But that's true, but you know what? I mean, he didn't really get that across properly in the first episode, or, you know, the first appearance. This time, he really did. I mean, that to me was what was really good about this one, was I felt at the end of this one, I understood where The Rock was coming from. I felt that he was so passionate and so strong. I mean, yeah, he wasn't in front of the live crowd, so you don't have that energy. You couldn't repeat that. You couldn't repeat a lot of the little nuances of just the specialness that was his first moment again. But as far as, like, getting across the content, this is why I have a problem with this guy. This is what he did. I'm pissed. And I'm going to do something about it. And he got that across, and I don't think it's just because he's an actor. It's because he's the goddamn Rock. He got that across so well. He got that in a way across in the first way in a long time that made me excited to see WrestleMania.
Well, and I loved just the opening a bit when he was doing the, you know, he had the, and he did the, you know, you can't see me. And I thought, okay, that's hilarious, but let's not keep going back to that, you know, and harping on it. And he did, and he dropped it right away through that. He almost said shit when he said crap. He said, turn this crap,
get
this off me, or whatever he said. And I thought, oh, okay, good. But the other one that he did was, the other thing I laughed at was, you know, somewhere in between when he was being not the, you can't see me, but not the super serious, was when he went, looked at him and looked at the screen and said, you know, you addressed me in the form of rap. You know, I came out like a man and you come back with a rap, you know, and totally, you know, because, and that's great heat because John Cena was coming back as the Doctor of Thuganomics to say, look, I don't have to be the PG kid thing, and Rock cut that down too.
Yeah, he did.
So that to me was tremendous.
Well, I mean, I've been complaining the entire time that the problem I have with this angle going in is that likely we're not going to get a payoff. I mean, you're building up these two men who have this beef with each other, and then at the end, you know what, the Miz is going to end up getting a rock bottom, an attitude adjustment, or whatever the hell is going to happen, and he's going to end up, and these two are going to probably end up shaking hands or whatever. That's what I was scared about. I was scared that they were building a payoff that they had no intention to ever give us when they've been doing so much of that. I mean, with things like Cena being fired, and they had no intention of actually ever going through with it, that they were going in that same direction. But it didn't seem this way. When I came out from this was, I have so much heat with you, and it's so legitimate, and you struck at me so much. I think there has to be some sort of confrontation between Cena and The Rock now. Even if it's not a match, now I know that I'm probably going to get something. And that's what I'm going to pay for, because frankly, The Miz is no buys for me. I'm not paying, I'm not paying for The Miz.
The Miz is the little brother just trying to, you know, get in.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good, good analogy.
With the big boys, right? But
where the big boys play?
If you will. But I think that... there's no way now that, you're right. I was sort of fearing that, too, is that, you know, they would have this heat, and then at the end it would be the, oh, I respect you in the end, and they would do the you can't see me or the people's elbow together. But I don't see now how there's any way that they can do that without it being a Russo-esque swerve, which would
be awful. Yeah, they built it up too well. They built it up too well where then people will be pissed that they don't get that confrontation. So that, to me, what was great about it. I understand The Rock better. I believe The Rock. I'm on his side, and that means I want to see it, and that means I'll pay, and that's great. That's what Mania missed, you know. And speaking of what makes you want to pay for something, let's hit the opposite end of the scale. Everybody's down on the Triple H promo. I'm probably not as down on it as a lot of people, but what'd you think?
Well, I understand where he was coming from the perspective of you're trying to build the match. You're saying, you know, we're the two guys that have been around here forever, and nobody can touch us, and we're the icons and the legends, and, you know, the cliches that get bantied around all the time now.
It's the biggest money match on the card. I mean, there's no question of that.
In
terms not the biggest money thing, but the biggest money match.
The biggest name-valued match that they have, and it'll probably be the best match of the night, given the fact that I don't think they're going to give Sheamus and Daniel Bryan a lot of time.
No.
So I think that it'll live up to the hype, but it just there's better ways, I think, to go about it than saying, you know, everybody back there can't, you know, sniff our jocks sort of thing, and just essentially say, you know, all the garbage that's back there, it's just you and I from, you know, we're the only two guys left from when wrestling was good. And when people drew money, and when people wanted to watch the show.
Even if it's true?
Well, even if it is true. But it's true.
That's true to a degree.
Well, of course it's true, but how has that become any less true by pointing it out to everybody? To the 7-year-old that what you're watching isn't as good as what your dad watched, or your older brother watched, or your uncle watched. You know, it doesn't, you know, make you feel any better about yourself, you know, is watching this. Why would I watch something that, you know, that isn't good anymore?
Yeah, no question. But, you know, I think the way he was presenting it, that is how it sounded. That's how it sounded to the people in the back. That's obviously how it sounded to the audience. But I have to admit, that's not really how it sounded to me. I didn't think that he meant it that way. Maybe his choice of words or his presentation was poor. I really just think he meant, look, We've been here a long time. We're legends. I want a chance to settle this with you one last time. No offense to everybody else in the back.
Well,
no offense to everybody. He didn't come across that way, but
well,
I don't think he's saying nothing else matters or nobody's as good as much as he's saying I'm established a certain level and you've established a certain level, and that level's not going to fall from that. Other people, they might be dangerous, they might be in the back, they might be great, they might even be able to draw money and might be able to beat us, but they haven't established that level like I've established and you've established, so let's go head on since we're the only two guys at that level, which is the truth. I don't think it came across that way.
Well,
but I think that's what he meant.
I'll agree with you.
Came across to me that way. I wasn't as offended as many people.
I'll agree with you that that's what he meant, but what he said was what you said there, what you just did. He said the exact opposite. nobody back there is as good as us. We're the last two. And once we go away, everybody back there, it's going to suck.
But they can fix that come the next promo. All he has to do is come out there and say, nobody back there is as, instead of making it, nobody back there is as good as us, he has to make it, nobody back there is as accomplished as us.
No, well,
that is a different thing.
That's true, and they can
fix that in a hurry.
They can gloss it over, and Kevin Dunn and his guys can do that. But and then Sheamus, the guy that took him out of action, comes
that
out.
That I had a problem with.
Well, see, and that's the part that I didn't have a huge problem with. But I still had a problem with it, the way that it went down. But I have no problem with Hunter in, one of the top matches at WrestleMania, you know, beating Sheamus. If that was what you were going to present, Hunter should have won or should have come out looking stronger. And Sheamus, I mean, as much as Sheamus has been buried lately, it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, we just kept thinking, oh, it was a big surprise when John Morrison was beating him around Survivor Series time. And Sheamus, you know, hasn't since he won the King of the Ring. And even a little bit before that, he was losing, and then he got the King of the Ring, and then the losing just continued.
Yeah, he did not turn around after that King of the Ring. Of course, they blame him for not getting over. Mind you, who the hell's going to wear that crown and that cape and get the hell over it? It's fucking stupid.
And that's apparently Kevin Dunn's call that
he didn't get over. And he didn't get over. But again, you look like a joke. Of course you're not going to get over. My problem is that he comes out there and he gets kicked in the nuts. That's the way it came in. Hunter kind of pauses because he's like, oh shit, I kicked him in the nuts. Now I'm not going to look as strong for beating him up because I look weak. But he only pauses for half a second. Then he kicks the shit out of him. Okay, fine. That I don't have any problem with him putting him over or beating him up. But my problem is he could have made him look at least sort of strong because it's not like this guy isn't going into Mania challenging for a title. So Hunter beats the shit out of him in 2 seconds. Miz beats the shit out of Daniel Bryan, no problem. And now we're supposed to be interested or theoretically pay for when these two meet for a title at Mania? That makes no sense. That's, God damn it. Can't you find somebody else in these spots? Can't Sheamus be made to look bad? Or can't Triple H just say, I'm going to deal with you after everything else? Like, just something. Just some way of handling it a better way.
Well,
I mean, say this. Undertaker's back. He's ignoring what happened with Kane. I don't know if that's good or not, but it's preferably to just destroy the guy in 2 seconds.
Well, he's ignoring what happened to Kane, but of course Wade Barrett definitely reminded Kane on SmackDown that the nexus with Barrett's leadership was the one that helped Kane bury the Undertaker, just for Kane then to turn on the core and join up with the Big Show, I guess,
that
for
was
their
very
Mania
strange
showdown. But
of course, we know they're going a multiple man match that's being added since we talked about the matches last week.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it's going to be like a 5-man match with, you know, Big Show and Kane and Kofi Kingston and Christian. One other member, I can't remember who that is. Was it Ray?
Nash?
No, it's not Nash. Well, Nash apparently won't be there. But either way, a 10-man match. Just the one thing they do is they try and get everybody on the Mania card so everybody can get a big payday. And that's a good thing. That's one of the times when, you know, I mean, say what you will about the way they treat their talent, and I have issues with that. There's a lot of problems with that. But that's a good thing that they do.
But so Glenn Jacobs replaced Kevin Nash. That's strange.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
Never happened before. That is strange. So,
you know, what we want to do right now is actually we just want to mention that we have an email address. We had actually quite a few followers and quite a few people who watched or listened to us, gave us a shot. Appreciate you giving two morons like us a chance here to talk some wrestling. And we want to hear back from you. We'd like to hear if you enjoyed the fact that we had our celebrity guests on last week, if they preferred us to keep that up, try and throw a little comedy and a little bit of fun energy. Just want to hear us analyze the wrestling. We'd like to hear any sort of comments and feedback. And, of course, if you didn't like the show, keep that shit to yourselves.
Yes. It's We Talk Wrestling, all one word. We Talk Wrestling at AIM.com. We Talk Wrestling at AIM.com. Hit us up. We'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, and we have a lot of other celebrities that we probably will be in contact with. Luckily, I have connections with virtually everybody in Hollywood. And the few people I don't, the ad guy over there, Big Addy Cool, he has their text number and their email address and such. So we will be, Bobby Lindsay, for instance, is Bobby Lashley, my mistake, who would call him that? He's probably coming up, I would imagine. Alf, we've mentioned that before. few other people that we have in touch with. Joey Lawrence is a regular contributor to our show, but correspondent, really. We'd like to know if you enjoy that, please. We'll put a list up of the other celebrities we're thinking of getting in touch with. But if there's anybody on your mind, email us, let us know, and maybe we'll get to them. Let's get back to talking some goddamn wrestling.
Joey Lawrence is actually our house show reporter.
That's true. He was actually at a TNA event last night. Joey, is that you on the line? What did you think of the TNA event?
Whoa.
Thanks, Joey. You know, he always lets us know so much.
He comes through.
Every single time.
It's the insight I like.
I want to talk about that Miz Cena interaction. You know what? Why the hell can't Cena ever be pissed off about something a heel does to him? I mean, Jesus Christ, that's one of my issues with the characters. One of the reasons I hate him. He never shows... I mean, for a guy who's supposed to be the champion, where's that babyface fire? The guy fucking gives him the skull-crushing finale, I guess they call it, breakdown, whatever the hell you want to call it, the stroke. But he gives him this move. He costs him the tag team titles. Sure, it's only the goddamn tag team titles, but nevertheless... Why doesn't he come out next week and be, you know what, that's fine. You can cost me the tag team titles. You can bring out your little friend here. You can help you spell your name. I can make fun of the fact that you look like a frog or you don't have a chin. But I don't need to do that. In a few weeks, we're meeting. In a few weeks, I get to break your bones up from the inside and take your title at the same time. You are awesome. You've been great all year. But you know what? I'm John Cena, and I'm going to make a message to you. I'm going to kick your ass.
Because then he doesn't get to pull out the doctor's note. Make fun of obsessive compulsive disorders, first off.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's wonderful for the children. But, and put his arm around him, and that was the other part of it when we talk about the promo, and you're right on the money with the whole, John Cena part of it. But, I mean, John Cena's put his arm around the Miz, and the Miz is just sitting there looking at him. He's not offended that this happened. He's not saying, get your fucking hands off me. Don't you fucking touch me.
No, that's Karen Angle.
That's Karen Angle's gimmick. But I mean, he's not offended by his WrestleMania main event opponent, putting his arm around him and palling around with him. So it's really, there's neither side in that confrontation or that promo time has done anything. I mean, and again, everybody's worried about The Rock at this point. So The Rock is drawing the house, and that's the smart thing anyway. But, I mean, still you can kind of... I mean, when Mike Tyson drew the house, or draw the interest, I guess, not drew the house, but drew the interest for the Michaels Austin match at Mania 14... they still hated each other and they still played into the fact that, they were having a match and Mike Tyson was also going to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's I hate the Raw. It's almost a three-way dance with Rock not competing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, no,
and the
good
other
way to put it.
The other two are fodder.
Well, I know that Dave Meltzer had a discussion about whether or not Brock Lesnar would have meant more as a buy than The Rock, and I say he would have because unless he was just being a referee, then I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
But if it had been a match, sure. Rock competing in a match is probably as much or more than Lesnar. Two wrestling fans in Mania, I do think that. But, he's not competing in a match, so... But like I say, that was the good thing about his promo. There's going to be a payoff now. There has to be something. You just can't build it up that way. People will revolt if they don't pay us off in a little bit.
Wow.
But I'm going to go back to The Rock for a second here, because I want to talk about something. Are you aware, or do you think Mania hosts... Do they have to pass any sort of wellness policy? Should they have to pass a wellness policy? What's your view on that?
I remember The Rock wearing a shirt because of some surgery that he had doing the program with Mankind around the Beyond the Mat, Royal Rumble match. So and that tells me what I need to know about wellness. So should they know? Are they going to get other guys that, Arnold Schwarzenegger's, if they could get him, they'd bring him on, and could Arnie pass? I mean, who knows? And I don't think it sets necessarily a good example, but I when it comes to The Rock, I don't have a problem with it, because The Rock isn't drawing money like a Scott Steiner. I don't say money, but his gimmick isn't like a Steiner or a Rob Terry. Or he's not a muscle bound freak. If Rock was, when Rock wasn't working out and getting well, and he was in his original movie star frame that he had when he really slimmed down. I think it was for
Walking Tall. That's
not Walking Tall. It was the one Be Cool. That he got in there, but Rock draws with his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He talks the people into the arena and onto the pay-per-view, and so he can look like you, quite frankly, and he would still draw some money.
Yes. Well, I am money, but my problem is that The Rock came in first time he came in, he was about 275 pounds. He had a little bit of baby fat still on him. He come from the CFL. I mean, he played some football and that type of thing, and he was a big man. He looked like a powerful, muscular man. I mean, that was the thing. He was a defensive tackle. I mean, that's
didn't he used to play for the Stampeders?
He used to play for the Stampeders. Yeah, my one interaction with him, where he really made an ass of myself when he came here. Anyways, we're not going to talk about that. But you know what? If you see The Rock, by the way, don't ask if that's what he used to do for a living and if he's done anything since. That's not really. But anyway,
he didn't enjoy that.
No. That was fantastic. But the guy was a defensive tackle. He's a big, powerful guy. And then when he was about 275 when he debuted, a little bit of body fat still on him, not quite the definition we know of. In the day and age where he was at his height, in like 99, 2000, in that range, he was about 255, about 20 pounds lighter. And, when he actually came back around the time of Walking Tall, around that time when he came back and fought Goldberg, he was actually down about 215, 220.
Yeah.
And that was, but you wouldn't, it didn't matter. He could still draw. He was The Rock. He had that mouth.
It doesn't matter.
He looks to me like right now he's back up to 265, 270.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks huge.
Yeah.
And I do think when you're just looking that massive, and he's 38 now, so I believe he's 38. So I think when you're that big and you're this age, you put on, 50 pounds of muscle mass. That looks unnatural. The steroid policy, the wellness policy is a joke anyways. We know that. I mean, look at Mason Ryan. Look at guys like that, and there's obviously ways for people to get around this type of thing. But it's also, if you do look at people like Edge and you look at a lot of guys, Chavo Guerrero, people like that, their physique 7-8 years ago compared to now, there has been some good effects from the wellness policy. And when you get a guy like The Rock who comes out there, he's a main eventer, and he's going to look like that, I do think it puts some pressure on some of these mid-card to lower mid-card acts who are hoping to move up. So that is my issue with it. I'm not saying you can get him to do it. But I do have a problem with the way The Rock has put on this muscle mass again over the last 2 years, basically.
Yeah, and I personally don't have a problem with it because, again, the Rock to me is the promo and not.
That's why he could be smaller and it wouldn't matter, but he's not.
No, but I mean, who knows? I mean, he's not looking at wrestling primarily. I mean, he's got other movies that he's doing, so he's getting back. He's going away from the Tooth Fairy game plan, Disney, and he's gone back to these action movies faster,
I think it did about $12 at the box office.
Think,
that worked well,
which is actually 14 more than The Chaperone.
That's true. That's so, somehow The Chaperone went into the negatives.
Yeah, well, somebody asked for a refund, and it turns out they didn't pay. But,
yeah, exactly, refund the popcorn somebody bought. No, wait, we only said $2. That'd be more like 20.
Yes.
All right. Well, you got your subject now. It's your turn to pick one because I've been hammering you on mine and beating you on all these debates so far. So, you going to win anything here?
Well, I'm winning. Is what I'm
winning.
Doing. Winning.
You are the Charlie Sheen of the show.
I am. I'm winning. Now, we'll move over to TNA.
Mr. Sheen, by the way, a very good friend of mine. Someday
we'll
I might be able to get him on the phone.
Yes. Please, I would really look forward to talking to him.
To Mr. Sheen, yes.
To Mr. Sheen. Now, I'm looking over to TNA. A couple things struck me. You actually watched the whole show, did you?
Pretty close, as much as a person can stomach. And this was a better than average TNA show, which still means that it was far from perfect.
1.4 in the ratings.
1.4 in the ratings, going up against UFC. I saw some polls wondering who would win in the ratings. The UFC on Versus is not going to beat. I mean, I figure TNA would be around the 1.3 and no change. And,
mm-hmm.
They're not. UFC on Versus was not going to do that. But still, an impressive rating, absolutely.
It was. And there was a couple things that I've seen bits and pieces of the TNA show. I've seen the highlights. I watched the return of Sting, who came back in, it seems, some form of hybrid between the Crow and his
early
former
90s.
Early Surfer Boy Sting.
Surfer Boy Sting, yeah.
Deal, which, I mean, 54 years old, couldn't, or however old he is, 52, 54.
I believe he's 52.
Yeah, okay. And that was the best sharpshooter I think I've ever seen.
You mean more the one where he couldn't even bend his knees?
The standing sharpshooter, yes.
Yeah.
That and again,
he's 52, for Christ's sakes.
I mean, I saw the look on Jeff Hardy's face that they panned in, and he looked a combination of tired, like he was taking a nap there while the lights were out, unimpressed, and he also had a little bit of the boo-boo face on there that he was going to, you know, this is who I'm losing to.
Well, actually, you know what? There was something of that, but I like while they're doing the 3-11 or whatever the hell it was, or 3-3-11 on this screen, mm-hmm. And they're panning to Jeff Hardy, and he has to have this look on his face like, Jesus, I wonder who it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they made it really hard to figure out, and he looked like an idiot for going, it's Sting? I can't believe it. Yeah. Never saw that coming.
No, and then Taz made a point of saying, you know, a lot of speculation where Sting was going, and again, just, you know.
Because, you know, they're part of the WWE.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was the one part that I saw on TNA. The other part that I watched was the 14-minute, must have been the opening.
We're talking TNA, and I'm going to drink some more goddamn beer.
Yeah, well, you better, yeah. The opening, I guess it was the opening with the Dixie Immortal and Fortune came out. So a few things that, as I think of this promo, this promo in my head, and how you'd proposed to me earlier who was a better promo, Linda or Dixie.
Yeah, I was wondering that, having watched that. I mean, who's less charismatic or worse promo,
well,
within a wrestling context?
To me, it's still Linda. Linda still is wooden.
To me, honestly, she was terrible.
They both have equally bad acting ability, I think, but Dixie gets that, like, crying emotion, bad actress, like a bad horror film being chased by the villain who's inside the house, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Linda, if the villain or if the killer was still inside the house, she would go, oh, there is a killer still inside of my house.
Yes.
You know, so there was that part, and the great, I loved Flair.
Flair was hilarious.
Flair was awesome.
You know what? Flair wants to be heel so badly, mm-hmm. that he was going pretty disgustingly deep in how he was attacking Dixie to make himself, you know, if you had just come to my hotel room
in Orlando,
this wouldn't have happened.
Well, but the thing is he was cutting, he was Nation there, and he was cutting, a TBS Studios, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, you know, Four Horsemen promo.
Hey, it was in Flair
Dixie,
country,
right?
It was.
It was in Fayetteville, South Carolina, or North Carolina,
yeah.
Wherever, one of the Carolinas, and it was so Flair was great, and then Hogan comes out and cuts a shoot promo on Dixie, essentially calling her a money mark.
Which
is why it's true. Like I said, I didn't write down everything that Hogan was saying, but I was just laughing, and I couldn't, like, how did that make television? And it brought us back to, you know, is she stupid? And, you know, no, but she's naive. And that's just it, is they have no idea. And Hogan's voice, it was hilarious.
That was a discussion we had last week. Is she naive or dumb? And one that you didn't really want to talk about, but I felt we had to bring up, because we're not here to be nice or to, we're not going to, I mean, obviously, yes, we both have Dixie's email, and we talk to her at least once a week, but nevertheless, we're really, we're here to state our opinions, but we're talking about whether she's stupid or naive. Talking about stupid, they had Joe Warren of Bellator Fighting Championships on during the Matt Morgan Hernandez match, which, by the way, Matt Morgan, one of the most awkward-looking big men I've ever seen in a ring. He looks like such a good athlete, and then he's not in the way he moves.
But Joe Warren.
But Joe Warren, you had some opinions on that. I know.
Well,
please.
I was completely dumbfounded sitting there on watching Spike TV, the home of the UFC, essentially without UFC, I don't know that Spike TV exists.
Yeah, to this day. They have so much MMA content on it. Their replays, their Pride Fighting Championship, all that's owned by UFC. They have, the Tough. They have the Fight Nights. They have replays of UFC pay-per-views a few months afterwards. Well, I mean, the amount of MMA, UFC-related MMA on that station is huge. It's almost the UFC station.
But regardless of that much content, what brought them to the Spike TV were for men what flagships and anchors that format that took it from the Nashville network to the national network to Spike TV. Granted, they became Spike when WWF was on it there, but yeah. And then
they stole it from Spike Lee.
Well, yeah, and then the Ultimate Fighter comes on and really takes off, and WWF leaves, but then the anchor is, I guess, what I'm going for. And there's a little more to this story, though, than meets the eye, I think, and there's stuff that we don't quite know about yet, because that Bellator show was being plugged on Spike.
Yes.
Like, on different shows, like commercials on Spike were airing for Bellator on Much Music 2. So, not just during TNA. Mm-hmm. It just seems like such an odd tie-in, and it may not end up being. Now, when I'm watching Joe Warren on TNA, and first off, I thought what he was talking about when he was talking about tournaments and how, you know, the better man wins and moves on and has nothing to do with TNA. They win and they lose and they compete for championships based on how many wins that they have, and Vince Russo must have just been sitting there going like, boy, this man has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just how is that supposed to draw money?
He must have just been mind blown by this. But I think there might be something more to this tie-in with Bellator and Spike, or maybe Spike's just, you know, willing to take their money. I don't know. But for them to promote, I gotta think that if it was anyone else but TNA, I would think that they would have had to have cleared it with Spike executives before they go on and plug this outside show on a completely different, unaffiliated network. But, you know, I'd say that, as I said, if it was anybody but TNA. TNA could go either way.
Yeah. TNA, speaking of going either way, do you want to talk about Orlando Jordan now or later?
Oh, let's get it out of the way.
Let's get out of the way. I do not know why in this day and age, when there's so many different gay characters on television, far more than there was, say, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, when Ellen came out 10, 15 years ago as a gay character on primetime television, it was a huge deal. Now you have them on HBO series, Will and Grace, and obviously that was another big one. But just all of a sudden the idea of a character being a homosexual, having a bisexuality, anything in the is not such a big deal. Some of that stigma is being broken down. But in wrestling, that person still has to be treated as though they're a lesser person. They still have to be made a joke of. They still have to be dressed in a dress. Why is it that wrestling cannot promote a strong, normal, gay character and still have them come across as an athlete? And come across as somebody to be taken seriously, but still respect their sexuality. Why is it that they're so far behind? And you know what? They're behind on a lot of different racial stereotypes and these type of things. But, it wasn't that long ago that, Psychosis and these guys were coming out still riding lawnmowers. I mean, how many years ago was that? 5-6 years ago?
Six, maybe.
On SmackDown. But I just don't know why they can't look at this and go, you know what? Why is our mentality still this way?
Well, and I think you said it that, you know, they've always been behind the times in terms of look at Ron Simmons in 1993 as, you know, they're the first African-American heavyweight champion, and that was 1993.
Yeah, good
you know,
point.
They just had, if they had, it was in February, they had Sputnik Monroe Day. Mm-hmm. Was in February. You talk about someone breaking down racial barriers and on the cutting edge of breaking down racial barriers.
Why don't you let some people may not know too much about Sputnik Monroe. Why don't you fill them in a little bit on him?
Well, Sputnik Monroe from and what I'm referencing is him being in Memphis, and they used to have a segregated arena, essentially, where the blacks would be up on in one section further away, and Caucasians down closer to the action, as it were. And Sputnik was saying, "No, none of this. Let's he was really on the
He was a big enough draw on both sides that he had the power to do that, to kind of break that down
to
that,
say,
that barrier.
Let's just integrate it, and I don't care what you are, right?
Yeah,
go." Sit in, and again, but it took someone with that much power to be able to do that in that one local area. And I mean, I talk about Sputnik Monroe. Then we talk about 1993 with Ron Simmons. We talk about 1984 was Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas with the first black tag team champions that they promoted. Rock, first man of color to be the WWF. I mean, they had an angle.
No, they rarely actually reference that.
No, they don't, but he did. In 98 or so when he was doing. But, I mean, they had an angle in 1997 around with Farouk. And
Bret Hart and that one? Is that the one
I'm talking even before that. Farouk was going to get his title shot here in Calgary, actually, and it never happened. I forget how he got injured against The Undertaker and the build-up to it.
Vader ended up taking
Vader
that,
took
yeah.
the shot, but yeah. The build-up to it was, you never had a black champion. And
that's right.
It was, so... They've always been behind the times with that, and I think they're going to continue to be behind the times with this, with homosexuality. And really, I mean, Vince McMahon is, haha, pal, and very much...
Vince McMahon largely has his sense of humor is that of a 13-year-old boy. And, which is really, you think about it, you just have to look at his Dr. Heine and these things. Vince McMahon has the mentality of a 13-year-old boy, but you talk about it, needing somebody in a position of power. Wasn't Pat Patterson, who has wrestled his entire career as a homosexual, he was out of the closet, it wasn't referenced on TV, but it was known in the back room.
Vince's right-hand man.
I don't know why this guy didn't step up at some point and go, you know what, we're not going to put Canyon in that dress just because he's gay, because being gay and being a cross-dresser is not the same goddamn thing. Well, you don't have to humiliate the guy just because he is.
Well, Vince, you talk about Vince having having a sense of humor of a 13-year-old boy. Do you think that's why him and Mel Phillips got along so well?
Mel Phillips, accused of. Anyways.
But anyway, and that's the part that's sort of mind-blowing and with the, with the homosexual character not being portrayed is, you've got Pat Patterson there, his right-hand man for years. Brooklyn Brawler has been, employed there for years. And I don't think he has a problem with it.
I don't think he'd have these people as in his inner circle.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there is an element of it, and again, it's more of a locker room element, I think.
I just think it's time to get over it. I just think it's time to go. Let's look at modern media. Let's look at everything that's happening around us and go, let's just be more evolved. Anyways, let's move on to something. We have our first interview of the evening. Actually, is. Thank God, lighten it up a little bit here. We have the alien life form known as Alf. He's on the phone for us. We're really looking forward to this. We've been wanting to talk to Alf for a long time because, Alf, are you there?
Hey, Willie, is that you?
Name's Mo, but it's okay. Alf, we saw you do a commercial just a few years ago with Hulk Hogan, and that's kind of why we wanted to have you on here. Your wrestling background with Hulk, what was that like? Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, sure, no problem. Now, me and Hulk, we were twin brothers from different mothers. It was tremendous, Willie. It was ecstatic, Willie. It was one of the greatest times of my career.
My name's not... It's Mo. But anyways, Alf, so I actually got a couple emails because I had mentioned to a couple friends that you're going to be on.
Oh, great.
One of them, my good buddy Art Donovan, he's wondering how much you weigh.
Well, that's a personal question, Willie, and I'm not sure I want to answer that.
Still, Mo. Okay, how about this one? I got one from Bob Uecker. He's wondering actually how tall you are.
Oh, Bob Uecker, what a great guy. Yeah, I used to be on Mr. Belvedere. Tremendous show. Loved the show. Great show. How tall am I? I'm 3'6".
3'6". Okay.
When I'm not wearing pumps.
When you're not wearing pumps. All right. Well, that's actually right in there with his question. He's wondering, he thought you were about that size, and if you were, he was wondering if you would consider, according to, this is Bob Uecker's quote on his email, if he is in the size to be in the midgets, would he care to wrestle in a midget in the WWE? Maybe he could see a little beaver.
We prefer the term little people.
Oh.
But little beaver, I'm not sure about beaver, but I do like to eat cats.
Oh, so you're kind of like Jerry Lawler.
Jerry Lawler? Well, Jerry Lawler likes to eat cats because they only live to be 16.
Ah. Well, thanks a lot. I think on that note, we better cut this off before we get sued.
Yeah, I got to get running. No problem, Willie. Thanks so much, Willie. It's been great, Willie.
Still Mo.
All right, Willie. Thanks.
All right. That was, you know, that guy, his wrestling knowledge was tremendous, and I really appreciate the insight.
Alf's always been a great. He came out about the same time as King Kong Bundy. So I mean, really,
yeah.
When you think about it.
There you go. All right. Well, I want to talk about it one more thing on TNA really quickly here. We got TNA was on the road, and the look in the arena, as far as making them look like legitimate competition, as far as making them look closer to being a big league product, and having a good crowd that was into it, the crowd that was there obviously had been watching the product. They knew to chant beer money along with beer money and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really enjoyed, I think part of the reason why the show felt a little bit better is simply felt fresher, felt bigger. What did you think of them being on the road?
Well, I understand why they get about 3,500 or so. I think 3,000 paid, I heard, and 3,500 in attendance. So
yeah,
that's
and well set up, a good setup, a stage setup, and the lighting and everything like that
mm-hmm.
looked very good.
And it looked, yeah, it looked a little different, but not too different. You're right. The crowd was into it. They knew, you know, what to chant. And I mean, really, the type of show that they built with Flair on it in Flair country,
yeah.
Sting.
By the way, when he came out with Immortal, everybody came out and they got a cheer, which is, I mean, it's Flair, it's Immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Came out and got a cheer. Somebody else from North Carolina who could not have looked more useless with Immortal and didn't say a word, Matt Hardy. Anyways, you're saying.
We'll get to Matt Hardy. I do want to talk about Matt Hardy in a minute, but they were in the right place. They've got the Carolinas, they've got the Hardy Boys, they've got the return of Sting. You know, and Ric Flair. They were set up nicely for the crowd, knew what they were doing. I don't know about the cost involved in going on the road like that is the only thing.
I think with 3,000 paid, though, they'd be all right. And I'm not so sure some of these production costs aren't offset by Spike TV.
Well, it's possible, but Spike TV isn't gonna foot that bill, you know, every week.
Have you seen what Spike TV has actually done to support them? Spike TV has been the greatest television partner any wrestling company ever could have had.
That's true, and with a 1.4, it does raise questions.
Look at the contracts that they've helped pick up a portion of. RVD, Jeff Hardy, Sting, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've been doing it for a long time, and they're, I believe they picked up a portion of Angle's as well.
I think Angle, yeah. I mean, it definitely is possible that that would happen, that Spike TV could, you know, foot some of it, you know, if they're not working on Bellator right now.
Yeah, so but even at a 1.1, though, and now they're up to a 1.3, 1.4, and who mm-hmm. knows? Maybe they've built a little momentum. I'm not so convinced they'll stay at that. But even at a 1.1, they're quite a bit ahead of the average rating that the Spike TV has.
Well, they seem to be getting a formula down pat. They've done it a couple times now, and they're starting to figure out this formula where they can, because their pay-per-view business they've killed, they're building towards television shows, to shows. You know,
yeah.
They did the one they built towards the
the Return of They, I think it was.
Which?
Return of They.
Yeah, the Return of They.
Or it was the second day.
They've built to this wedding angle. They built in over the last summer to the what was supposed to be the pay per view, the 3-hour.
That's right. The television
show or whatever
or the pay per view quality show
mm-hmm.
that they were doing on television.
Yeah, so they were doing that built there, and it's been paying off, and they've actually been seeing it. You know, those are the ones that get, you know, the one right after Bound for Glory, similar with the 1.4. So they're being able to sort of build with some
measurable success. You know, if they were doing this and the odd one, they'd get a 1.1, or, you know, it wasn't working, then it would be for naught. They could say, oh, well, we've been building towards this, but it's not paying off. But the fact is that, you know, there's measurable evidence to say it is paying off. So it does give me a little bit of hope, not pay-per-view-wise or monetary-wise, but that they're doing sort of what they need to do. I thought they really need to pull back and almost not go a Ring of Honor way, but
well, I wouldn't mind at all if they went a Ring of Honor way.
Well, I just meant
the talent.
I meant business model wise, but because they're not really too far ahead of them. They just happen to have better television, or television as it were,
better partner
now. But I think that they're starting to get it, and they think they do have some momentum. I don't know that it'll last, because you never know how long that things will shift, you know, when somebody decides that this is not a good idea anymore. But for the time being, I hope they keep it up.
But there's still a lot, you know what, even with the shift and even with building to that one big show a month on television, that makes sense, because the building to a one big pay-per-view is obviously an utter fail. But I'm not so sure still the booking long-term is all that smart. For instance, I don't know why it is that Scott Steiner, at 47 or whatever he is, and beat up, is going over Rob Terry. Is it Rob Terry?
Rob Terry.
On the television show. I always confuse the name Rob Terry and Brutus Magnus, but I don't know why he's going over him in 2 minutes, because, you know, he's 20 years older. Like, it just still doesn't make any sense to me. It'd be one thing if Scott Steiner, what's his long-term, purpose with the company?
Well, that is true. I mean, Rob Terry really is almost, I don't want to say he's the new Scott Steiner.
He's not nearly as good as Steiner. But nevertheless, he's 20. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Rob Terry is the next star and they've totally blown it by, but I mean, he got destroyed by a man 20 years older. It just, there comes a point where you gotta stop doing that. And this is on the same episode where Sting comes out looking quite a bit older. I mean, Sting looks to me, I'm not saying that Sting looking like a guy who, he looks like he works out regularly, but not heavy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact though that, I mean, that Scott Steiner, Scott Steiner looks, so much bigger and is around the same age. It looks to me like Sting is not doing anything to enhance his physique. And I'm for that, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, why would you put the belt on a guy who refuses, by the way? I know it's probably not long term. But a guy who refuses to work house shows, when you're a company like them, where it's not like you're a product that people are going to see in the same way as WWE, it almost doesn't matter too much, except for John Cena, who's on a WWE house show.
Right.
It matters whether or not the TNA title is being defended on a house show. Why would you put it on a guy who does, like, what, 5 a year, if that?
If that, and it just happened to be, I think, when he did them, that they were in California, where he lived, right? So he didn't have to go very far. So, no, I've none of it, again, the whole from the house, yeah, he doesn't do any house shows. That's one perspective. How about the fact that he's 52 years old and he's over and he doesn't need a title, and putting the title on him doesn't give you any more notoriety with a toy company, with a video game company, with anyone, because you have Hulk Hogan, you have Ric Flair, you now have Sting, you have Kurt Angle, you have the Hardy Boys. I mean, you've got RVD, if you want to. I mean, that's probably next level down in terms of a Madison Avenue executive. But you have names that are recognizable, that they said advertisers or sponsorship companies are going to want to associate with or know to associate with them. And they don't give a fuck who the champion is, because they know it's phony wrestling and they just give the belt to whoever it is. So who gives a crap? And so from there is no real logical reason that Sting should be the champion.
No, there's absolutely nothing.
If
there.
They were doing a Randy the Ram type storyline where he was, you know, Rocky Balboa, he's coming back for one last kick at the cat, and he's going to, you know, train, and he's old, and I know this is a young man's sport, but I done it before and I can do it again. Similar to Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
And The Miz, right? If they did something that way with it, then okay. I don't think you need to do that, especially with the Jerry Lawler Miz thing. Then you're just copying WWF again or WWE.
And they would
again.
Never do that.
No,
never
copy. Yeah, it's so just
they've no history.
Unbelievably, that's just unspeakable. But really, if they had done something like that, okay, there's a reason for Sting to get the title. There's a reason for him to have a championship match. All it is it was 3-11, and people thought that that Undertaker coming back with Sting coming back, so let's do the same thing. Let's bring Sting back. Let's have him.
We want a big moment because we've built to this television show.
I don't understand. Yeah, but he didn't have to win for it to be a big moment.
He didn't even have to tell you the truth have a title match. All he had to do was come through. He didn't even have to have a match. All he had to come through was have Jeff Hardy in the ring, have him come back, have him be
Point the bat.
He could have actually knocked him out of the ring, and the heel could have come running. And then that could have set up a title match where Jeff Hardy beats him, and that would have been fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that exactly. There's no reason at all for him to be there. So. Or not to be there, but to be the champion. Just unbelievable.
All right.
I'm a little flustered now because fucking TNA.
All right, enough TNA talk. Well, I mean, I have a couple more TNA subjects I want to hit, but it doesn't have to be right now, and they're certainly at a different style than these ones. We're getting pretty close to the point where our show is almost over. Do you have any last subjects, or is there anybody that we were supposed to get another guest calling in? Is he on the phone now? Is he on the phone now?
Hey.
It is. It's my friend, Bobby Lindsay.
Hey.
Bobby Lindsay, how you doing?
Mo, is that you? Is that you, Mo?
Hey, Bobby.
Hey.
Could you speak up just a little bit, Bobby?
Is that you, Mo?
Bobby, I'm sorry, Bobby Lashley. I keep on getting... Why do I get your name mixed up? Is there somebody who did that who might have made a mistake in the past that made me confuse Bobby Lindsay with Bobby Lashley, a billionaire or something?
I don't know. It was fun time there. Umaga's dead now. But hi. Mo, is that you? Are you there?
No, I'm there. I'm there, Bob. I'm just trying to hear what the hell you're saying.
Thank you for having me on the show.
No, did you say something about you're on the show?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
Could you speak up? Just talk louder, Bobby, please.
I'm going to yell. I'm yelling now. I'm yelling at the top of my lungs.
I don't want you to hurt yourself. Don't have to yell like that.
I got a long workout. I'm going to have another fight.
You know what, Bobby? I think your poor line connection is making you so quiet. I guess that's why you're quiet. So, well, just, you know what, Bobby? I appreciate you coming on.
And
again, thank you so much. Learned so much about your interaction with Donald Trump and whether you're pissed at being called Bobby Lindsay. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thanks, Bobby.
I'll come back another time on a landline.
Bobby, hang up. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
That was the best interview we ever had, I think.
I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
No. Well, I mean, the guy, my ears are ringing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, so moving on here, I want to touch base. We go back to Raw. Let's move away from TNA, and we'll go back to Raw. We've seen
about
now...
To talk about that Brie Bella as number one contender?
Brie Bella as a number one contender, I'm about... Well, you know what? We're running out of time here, so maybe next week we can devote...
Well, the entire show to that.
Yeah, I think so. We'll have the Nikki and Brie Bella hour or something.
Yeah.
So you
had one last subject you wanted to hit?
Let's not do that. We've seen in the last few weeks here at least now, and on Monday Night Raw we got both, A-Rai and Michael McGillicuddy sent Packin and Husky Harris a couple weeks before. Guys getting sent down apparently back to OVW for some repackaging. FCW, for some repackaging. A-Rai.
I thought he was doing well. I enjoyed him in that role.
Well, I had I kind of thought something was up when he did that really shitty joke on Raw. About the toilet being called the John.
Yeah, why? Now I know why a toilet's called
and,
John.
And Michael Cole even healed him there.
Saying, yeah, Michael Cole.
And I thought, whoa,
couldn't even tell it right.
Yeah, he didn't do it right, or he was, you know, and he didn't even say, "Oh, I love the guy," but that was bad. He just he buried him on it. And then, but Alex Riley, he came out. He had a different look. I thought even for the cage match, like had different tights or whatever. He wasn't doing the varsity. Not that he hasn't been doing the varsity thing for a while, but he looked like he had already sort of started a little bit of the repackage.
Maybe.
There, but he's going back down, as is McGillicuddy and Harris, and that sort of ties into something we're hearing that there's definitely going to be some post-Mania cuts this year, as there are every year, with just because of the numbers being soft and the profits being lower. But it really it's going to affect the lower card guys, and they're going to be bringing up a whole slew of new rookies to sort of fill that lower mid-card and mid-card void. So,
what's amazing to me is how many of the guys they brought up recently, Jackson Andrew, for instance, Mason Riley, or is that, what is it, Mason? Ryan Mason. You know, for as an example, both of those two. I mean, many of the people actually who've been on FCW NXT.
Yeah,
Eli Cottonwoods and these guys, they've already brought up a bunch of guys. David Otunga, for fuck's sakes.
Yes.
Guys who are not ready already to be on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to probably drop a bunch of people. Chavo Guerrero maybe on the chopping block.
JTG.
Primo. Zack Ryder, because all these guys are more expensive, so they're going to bring up, I mean, McGillicuddy and Harris and Riley, they're probably going to come back up and be repackaged. How many of these guys, Trent Barretta's another guy, mm-hmm. is probably on the, there's a lot of guys who are on the bubble who may not be employed. And once these, I mean David Hart Smith and Tyson Kidd.
And Tyson
both,
Kidd, yeah.
There's a lot of these guys who have to be worried. So they're going to be brought in to people who are less experienced and, you know, all of a sudden, these guys, we've already seen a lot of these guys don't get over that well. Nobody in the core is over outside of Barrett. Nobody is over in right now as far as being over
Nexus?
Punk's group. Nexus, thank you very much. Nobody's over on Nexus except for Punk right now.
Yeah.
So these guys aren't getting over. They're not ready in the ring. So the idea that they're going to bring in a bunch more of these guys, and that's going to leave their developmental kind of strafe for talent, and they have to rebuild that when already that developmental is worse than it was a decade ago and worse than the territory system 20 years ago. I mean, really, long term, these poor profits and the way that it's going to affect this company has me worried.
Well, and what you're going to end up getting into is you're going to look at there's not going to be any veterans left to work with these young guys.
Yeah, the guys who work on the house shows to get these guys better, your Val Venus types, guys who are just your veteran hands, the mechanics, as they're known within the industry, they're not going to be there to help these guys learn and get over. They're going to be out of the door.
I mean, Chavo Guerrero is working with Percy Watson, doing all the dark matches on TV right now, and I'm sure that's helping Percy leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
But you need guys like that, and not that JTG is necessarily that guy, or Trent Barretta, or Curt Hawkins, or Zack Ryder, but
yeah, they've already strafed a lot of those guys, but I mean, they're still ahead of
Mason Ryan, or
exactly.
Anything. Yeah, so I look at it like I don't know if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. It's one of those we just have to kind of wait and see things, but I really think that it's not going to be. To me, you didn't put enough time into these guys. I mean, how much do we know about Trent Barretta? Well, so what was the point of having him?
Well, the ability to develop new characters, I really question nowadays. They only seem to know one or two ways to go about it. Their ability to get across a person is not as good as it used to be, obviously.
I know of the Dude Busters.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever saw a Dude Busters match.
No.
Like I can honestly say, I guess you're gonna have
I think I have, but I wouldn't remember.
I guess Christian's gonna be one of the mechanics now, isn't he?
Christian is a mechanic. I mean, that's his role. But you know what? He might actually be higher on the card with what's going on here with him and Edge and Del Rio. But that may also be temporary. I tell you what, that's a subject for another day.
I want to talk about that next week. Yeah,
yeah, next show we're going to have to hit that. That's maybe, if not the first subject, one of the first subjects we're going to do.
Yeah.
So let's get to that. And I think for this week, we're OUT.
Yeah, we can. I guess we're going to wrap things up. Just want to mention one more time before we go. It's wetalkwrestling.podomatic.com is our website, and wetalkwrestling@aim.com of our email address. So hit us up. We maybe get to some mailbag questions next week if we can.
Now, don't get me wrong. When these mailbag questions come in, we're probably going to take credit for them as ourselves. But nevertheless, we'll appreciate them.
Yeah, you're pretty self-centered that way, so that's all right.
That's true.
All right, well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.